From the number one best-selling author of Life Rescripted, you're now tuning in to the Year of Purpose podcast. I'm Zephan Moses Blacksburg. Kendra Wright is a blogger, writer, speaker, and location-independent entrepreneur. She has completed over 700 self-assigned comfort zone challenges, and I think that number's getting higher, and specializes in teaching others how to break through fear and uncertainty, productivity slumps, and create better work-life balance without abandoning the inner hustle. Kendra, what's going on today?
How's it going? I'm super excited to be here.
Thanks so much for being here. I know we connected, I think, last year at Podcast Movement, and I was just kind of roaming the hallways, and someone was like, hey, you need to meet this person. I'm like, what? Which person? And they brought me over to you, and we said hi, and it's just so great to connect with you about a year later here.
Yeah, it's really fantastic. It sounds like we're kind of on the same mission here. And so it was really exciting to connect with you, and so random, you know, totally random.
Well, I want to jump into a little bit here. You had this crazy time in 2013 where you really took on a huge challenge. And we're going to talk about that in just a minute. But leading up to that, I just want to hear a little bit about, like, who was Kendra growing up? Like, where did you grow up? What did you do? You know, did you go to school? Did you work a job? What was life like before this huge transformational experience that we're going to mention in a couple minutes?
Totally. So it's really funny that you asked that question because, you know, when you think about those awards they give out in high school, like most likely to be successful or creative or an artist or a movie star, you know, whatever that list is.
Yeah.
I think back to my high school, and if I could self-nominate myself, I would say I was the most likely to be average. And I don't say that as a pity statement. I actually say that as that was like my hope. Because a big part of my story, and some people know this and some people don't, is that I actually grew up in a super small town in the Midwest. You know, my family was, you know, pretty poor, and I actually had cerebral palsy. So when I was born, I was given a 5% chance of living. I spent the first 3 months of my life on an incubator, and I spent most of my childhood just learning how to walk. And so most people that have the condition that I was born with actually, you know, are really challenged to just live an average normal life. That's really the most that people can hope for them. And so when I say, you know, I was born average, or, you know, most likely to be average and then decided to be awesome, that's really, you know, not an understatement, because that was kind of my childhood. And so, you know, I didn't grow up with any major privileges. You know, I really kind of started from ground zero, as low as you could go. And so I think that's why my story is really exciting to share with other people, because I realized that I had to fight science to just stay alive. And, you know, people see my story, they hear my story now, and they see these pretty big, grandiose things that I'm doing, and they think, oh, you were just born fearless, or, you know, brave, or whatever word they choose to use. And I just kind of giggle, because I'm like, that's really funny and endearing that you think that, but I was the most likely to be average if I was lucky, you know, kind of person. So that's kind of where I started and how I grew up. I definitely was not the, you know, brave, adventurous kind of person that a lot of people associate to me today.
I like that you said I had to fight science to stay alive. I don't think I've ever heard that before. And I certainly think if you ever give a TEDx talk, like, that should be your title. But I think that saying that you fought science is almost like saying, you know, I went against logic and reason and everything that would tell you that you can't do something, and I did it anyway.
Absolutely. And I feel that, you know, this whole idea of going against logic and reason, you know, yes, I fought it on a bigger scale when I was born with science, but I think the reality is we fight it on a smaller scale every day. You know, just because, you know, being in a soul-sucking job or a job that you stay in because you have health insurance or it pays the bills is normal doesn't mean it's okay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, every day we kind of have to fight against this flow of ordinary and average. And I think that, you know, that's something that really excites me to kind of wake people up to, is just because everybody's doing it doesn't mean it's right for you or great for you or okay for you. And your life is your responsibility. So you get to make that decision. And just because other people say, you know, that's not logical, or that's not realistic, or, you know, insert whatever thing that, you know, those people around you are telling you, doesn't mean that it's still the way it has to be. Mm-hmm. You know, if I listen to what everybody else said for me, you know, the doctor said for me, and really it's like when a doctor says to your family, like, you know, just because she's alive today, don't get excited. You know, you'll be lucky if she ever walks or lives on her own or ever goes to college. I mean, those will be your highest aspirations. If I would have listened to that, that's from a doctor, I wouldn't have gotten where I am today. And so, you know, I really encourage people to think about when you're getting advice from other people. I don't take advice from anyone who isn't where I want to be. And that really knocks out 90% of the people, you know, that most people are talking to. So be really conscious of who's telling you what they are, and you can listen to it and not have to agree with it.
Yeah, I think it's very smart to look at what other people are doing and consider what they're doing. But I think we certainly make this mistake of saying like, oh, this person did X, Y, and Z and they became super successful, so all I have to do is do X, Y, and Z and I'll become super successful. And I don't think that's the right mindset to go about doing it. I think we should certainly take all options into consideration, but we shouldn't necessarily use that as a formula. And I think, you know, it's kind of built into our psychology. We love to have the secret or the formula or, you know, the answers and the solution, because we're all meaning seekers. But I think that, you know, we've really got to become that investigator and explore so much more than what's just being presented in front of us. Now, I don't know a whole lot about cerebral palsy, but how has that impacted you today? Like, what does treatment look like for that? And, you know, where are you now health-wise?
You know, that's really interesting because so when I was growing up, you know, I walked on my toes like a ballerina, had a lot of problems with my legs and a lot of issues around strength. And it causes some issues in my speech sometimes. You might hear like lisps and things like that. My hips are tilted in really weird, so I have a lot of back pain. If you ever see me in life, real life, which you have before, but I don't know if you notice this or not, I have a really weird gait. So I walk kind of odd. But I was really, really fortunate that when I was, you know, it's kind of fortunate and also unfortunate, but you know, when most kids were young, you know, they went to recess. Well, I went to therapy every day when I was a kid. So I didn't have therapy as a kid. I mean, I didn't have recess, you know, I had therapy. And so when I was younger, I sacrificed most of my childhood learning how to walk, you know, going into surgery, having casts on my legs, a lot of things of that nature. And I was very fortunate that I worked with really great doctors who were just committed in getting me as close to average and normal as possible. And so, you know, today, if you see me, you wouldn't think that I have cerebral palsy. And I also think another reason that is, though, and this is really, really important, is that I don't see cerebral palsy as who I am. I think of who I am as kind of like a big, delicious apple pie. And it's just a slice of who I am. It's not all of who I am. And I think that's a big reason on why I was able to not become my illness or my sickness or my disease or, you know, and a lot of people do that. And so the same thing of where I am not, you know, my, you know, body issues or self-confidence issues or anything, like you're there's a lot of things to you as a person. And so I took that as, I don't identify, like, I, this is going to sound really weird, but sometimes I forget I even have cerebral palsy because it's just, it's not who I am. It's just a part of me. Just, you know, sometimes you just forget that you own a pair of shoes. Well, it's just like, it's just a thing that I have, you know, it's not all of me. And so, you know, now, I do still have a lot of problems around like back issues and strength and flexibility and some speech and things of that nature. But, you know, I've been very fortunate that I have, you know, really front loaded a lot of the work when I was a kid and have made a lot of progress.
And it certainly appears that it's not holding you back from traveling the world and doing really awesome stuff, which kind of leads me to what came in 2013 for you, which was really quite an amazing year of, you know, challenges and taking on some new things. Could you share a little bit leading up to 2013, what ultimately, you know, encouraged you to take this journey, and then talk about, you know, what you actually did that year?
Absolutely. So something that's really interesting is that, you know, my outlook on life growing up with someone with a lot of physical challenges, you know, I was constantly protected, you know, as any family probably would, and in society would, anytime anyone found out I had CP. And I realized right around, you know, mid-2012 that, you know, every time I started and stopped things or didn't move forward on things or didn't go for it or really, really questioned myself, although all those things were very different in different ways, one thing could really be found at the root of all of them, and it was fear. And so I had this theory. I was like, well, if fear is really the root of everything that stops me or prevents me from moving forward on what matters most to me, what if I create an experiment? What if I could consciously change my relationship with fear? Because in theory, if I can change this permeating, this emotion, this, you know, we don't all deal with cerebral palsy. We don't all deal with suicidal thoughts or anxiety, or we don't all grow up rich. We all have these different things that kind of shape our lives, but we all deal with fear. And so the thing about fear is that it affects every area of your life. So if you can change your relationship with that one emotion, it can literally change every area of your life for the rest of your life. And so I decided that I was going to create a project. And at the time, this project was not a movement. This project was not a mission. This project was simply something that I wanted to do for me that sounded interesting and crazy and fun and obviously scary, because what I decided to do was every day for an entire year straight, I wanted to do something new, different, or outside of my comfort zone. And I really wanted to skew heavy on going outside of my comfort zone, but I knew that doing new things and different things were still uncomfortable, especially growing up, you know, with the background that I had. I definitely was not, you know, out this like adventurous, crazy traveling, you know, person that I am today. And I even remember the first time that I took my first plane across the country by myself. It was just absolutely terrifying. And now I travel all the time by myself. So I just decided I was going to do this project. And so for the whole year of 2013, I decided to do something new, something different, or outside of my comfort zone. And what happened by the end of it was just miraculous, because really, if you chunk anything down into daily tiny exercises, over time, it's just like money. There's compound interest. And who I was at the beginning and who I was at the end was miraculously different. So that was the first year of what I call now the Year of Fear Project. And I did that in 2013. In 2014, I, at that point, had really found that facing fear and, you know, creating and collecting experiences became a lifestyle for me. So 2014, I did some really amazing, epic stuff and basically started turning my bucket list into my to-do list. So I went whitewater rafting. I booked a one-way ticket to another city that I didn't know anyone in and lived there for a month just exploring and investigating. I did all these crazy things. And then in 2015, by the time I got to the end of 2014, I had kind of talked about this project that I had done. And the ironic thing is, up until that point, nobody knew about it. I was doing this quietly in secret, you know, all these different adventures. And people just thought I was this, you know, crazy, you know, insane person doing all these fun things all the time. And what I realized was that this project had become about more than me, and that it was selfish for me to keep it to myself, because the few people that, you know, heard about it in conversation or, you know, had been introduced to me to talk to me about it, they were just like, this is life-changing. Like, you know, you've been able to help me face some of my fears. And I was like, you know, what kind of impact would this have if I took it public? So for 2015, I decided that I was going to do another year of fear. And this time, though, I was, you know, I had like really gotten better at facing fear. And so I decided that I was going to go bigger and I was going to be more intentional and more purposeful about what I did. So 2015, I started being public about it. And then I did some things like I went on a police ride along. I did an EMT ride along. I volunteered at a soup kitchen. I went indoor skydiving. I did all these things, you know, those things that a lot of people talk about doing, but never actually slow down long enough to do.
Right.
And again, you know, another huge, crazy, life-changing year. And so by the end of 2015 and coming into 2016, people knew about the project. It started creating traction. And so now I actually teach people. I teach courses. I write about it, about how to face fear in really unconventional, interesting, fun ways. And I think facing fear should be mostly fun, because if it isn't fun, it's not sustainable. So I try to do it in unique, interesting, fun ways.
I really like that, you know, you kind of turn it into a game and a challenge for yourself, because I think that that's something that people miss out on, is they think, oh, you know, I want to do this thing, but I'm afraid. And they don't really have any fun behind it that's encouraging them over the edge to just go and do it. And, you know, I'd love to hear a little bit about how you've changed, you know, on the other side of some of the scarier parts. So what do you think are, you know, if you had to list out maybe your top three scariest things out of what you challenged yourself to do, and then maybe your top three most impactful, like ones that really made a difference in you and a change that you saw?
You know, it's funny because I could list them individually, but ironically, they'd be the same list, because I find the scariest ones are often the ones that impact me the most.
Okay.
But I believe that doing a lot of the smaller things in day-to-day life is what helps me build up the muscle to achieve the bigger ones, if that makes sense. So I think, you know, big challenges are you know, small challenges are just as big and important as big challenges. So I would say a few, just, and not necessarily in order of rank of awesomeness or importance, because they're all really equally important and awesome to me. I would say one was doing a police ride-along and an EMT ride-along, because really I think what those taught me, you know, something I don't think a lot of people realize is that EMT and you know, police, like, they're such a big part of our society. And I think, you know, especially with cops, they get a bad rap. And what I realized going on these ride-alongs with police was how misunderstood police were in our society. I've seen how much danger goes into their jobs every day. And I have massive, massive empathy for cops. And to sit in the side of a, you know, a police cruiser that's doing triple digits down the highway and realize that this is absolutely ordinary for a police officer every day, you know, to walk into domestic violence disputes, you know, where, you know, drugs are clearly involved and people are just a complete just tragedy, and see that these cops come with so much empathy. It really just, like, it blew my mind. And it made me realize how much I don't know about life and how many judgments maybe I had made in the past. And it really made me question, what am I judging now that I have no idea about? On the same side, that really carried over into the EMT experience, because the one thing that we often take for granted is our health. And I remember walking into these homes, and if you ever, you know, do an EMT ride along, one thing you'll really quickly realize is that there's this interesting chemistry. As cops, 80% of people don't want you there, and 20% of people do. As an EMT professional, it's completely the opposite. 80% of people want you there and 20% don't. Because when you walk through the door of a home as an EMT paramedic, people look at you and they need you to save their life. And there's nothing like watching, you know, these people having heart attacks and having strokes, or, you know, we had to go to this scene where we thought someone was dead and it was just a homeless person and they woke up on a curb that morning. And I was just like, wow, my life, there is nothing that is bigger than losing your health or sleeping on a curb because you have nowhere to go. And so those really, really woke me up to the fortunate things in my life. So those were two that I totally, totally recommend to a lot of people. A few other ones that were big for me at the beginning of 2013, I talk about this, that, you know, my blog started in 2013, but ironically, that was only when it was public. So I launched my blog at my end of my first year of fear, but secretly I had been writing for like 2 years, and I was afraid to publish my blog, because at that point I actually worked in rock and roll in the music industry for about 7 years, and so I had a lot of really famous, you know, rock and roll musicians as friends, and I also had a lot of really, really successful people, like authors and bloggers as friends, and I was really afraid of what people were going to think about me. And so at the end of 2013, I decided that, you know, people can think whatever they want to think about me. And that, you know, what I did was I decided I was going to go public with my writing. And I decided that I wrote down everybody that I was afraid of to read my blog. And I personally reached out to every single one of them and said, hey, I'm launching this blog. I wanted you to read it. I thought you might enjoy it, or you wanted to check it out. And then emailed them each and invited each of them. And the ironic thing is that the people we fear judging us the most, many of them will often later become our biggest supporters. And so I figured after that, if I invite all the people that I'm afraid of most to see what I'm creating, the rest of the world can't be that darn scary. So that was, you know, something big that was kind of more for me that I did. And again, at that point, the blog was just for fun. You know, it wasn't what it is today. And so I always encourage people, you know, this project started out as just something for fun. You know, I think when I look back at the biggest opportunity that I've had, the coolest experiences I've had, they all came from just doing things to do things. You know, you think like success obviously is a straight line, but it looks like this like crazy just scribble. And so, you know, there's really magic that happens when you put yourself in the proximity of people that are doing things that you love and enjoy, and you let go of all these things that you place on the back of your passion or your side projects first. So what became later a business for me was first as a project for fun. And I think that's how a lot of great ideas start out. So I would encourage, you know, your listeners, if they're stuck in a job they don't enjoy, or maybe they want to start a business, or, you know, they have a project, or they just have a funky, crazy idea, just know that people are going to think you're crazy before they call you cool. And that's okay. And you got to do things just to do things, because you just never know where they're going to lead. And so that's how I really, you know, started this journey. Was it was for fun. It was for me. It was a project. And, you know, now I'm just obsessed with what's something I'm really excited about, you know? And so I'm always looking for these like crazy ideas. And now people seem to think I'm a little cooler and I get a little more leverage. But trust me, they thought it was crazy for a really long time, and a lot of people still do. So,
I think it's funny that now you're kind of the one where it's like, yeah, I know I'm totally crazy and everyone else thinks it's cool, when before you were like, I think I'm doing something cool and everybody else thinks I'm crazy.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I don't know, I think like ordinary is overrated. I think that ordinary people are often really boring to me. You know, and I can say that with love and compassion, because I was as ordinary as they come. But, you know, the people that judge us are often not the people we'd ever want to trade places with. So just keep that in mind. And the thing is, like, they're totally entitled to have their own opinion. Totally cool. Like, have your vibe, have your side. Like, I hear you, but I don't have to listen. You can listen without letting it influence. I don't listen that much anymore, but, you know, I don't listen as much as I used to. But
yeah. Well, I mean, it sounds like your listening has just kind of turned internally, you know, like you're really starting to listen to what's right for you. And it seems like, you know, when everything's in alignment on the inside, a lot of the stuff outside tends to fall into place so much better than when we're trying to force it to happen the way we think it's supposed to happen. So I think that that's a big part of it, too, is you really start to listen to yourself.
Yeah, I think like the thing to mention about that, though, is that so I've really been thinking about this whole, you know, kind of school of thought around like heart and head, and how you're, you know, following one and listening to the other, and it gets really confusing. And so what I would say is that the more you do just kind of listen to your intuition and your heart, I think that the more clarity you'll find, but it's still always confusing. It's still always this jumble inside, but you feel better about the jumble. And I think if you can just get comfortable being uncomfortable with not knowing what's happening next, and you just say, you know, what's exciting to me right now? You know, if I wasn't afraid of what people thought of me, or if I wasn't afraid of how this side project could pay my rent next month, if I didn't need to place all these expectations on it, and I could just create maybe a little project out of it or an idea, you know, what would I do? And I think that's a really fun question that we can ask ourselves and take all this pressure off the back of our passion. Because a lot of the passions you discover, the reason why people don't discover their quote passion, which I, you know, we can go into a whole thread. Maybe I should come back on the show for why I think passion is a total, just straight big fat fib. I just think that you don't discover your passion sitting on the couch thinking about it. You don't discover your passion, you know, furiously burning the midnight oil, reading on the internet. The same way you don't discover your favorite band by thinking about what's a great next artist I love. You have to go out and experience things. You have to listen to new music. You have to take action. And so most people haven't found anything they feel excited about because I think they can think their way into it. And if that were the case, we'd all know what the heck we were doing with our lives. We'd know step A, step B, step C. And we don't. Like, hardly anyone does. Some of the most successful people I know still don't know what the heck they want to do with the rest of their life. So I would just encourage people to know that action is where you're going to get traction. And it doesn't have to always be the right action to lead you to a resource or an opportunity. Sometimes a lot of the wrong things lead you to the right places. And to just lean into that and just say, you know, like, where can I just find a new experience? What can I do because I'm excited about it? And what would I do if I wasn't afraid of what the rest of the world would think and I wasn't afraid of how this could help me pay my bills down the road? And I think that it's a lot easier to listen to your heart because you take your head out of the equation when you ask the questions in that manner.
I think that's awesome. And, you know, one of the things that kind of happens on these podcasts is we share amazing stories and then we talk about, you know, taking action and just doing it, just going. And I think people still kind of get stuck because they're like looking for, well, like, where's step one? And we're like, well, step one is you put one foot forward, right? Like, we're like, you just have to start going. And I know that you have something really neat that you're giving out to everybody that is kind of just going to get them started and give them a little kickstart to putting themselves in uncomfortable spaces in a fun way and really learning more about themselves and who they are. So I'd love, first of all, Kendra, I have to thank you for being here, but I want you to share, you know, what's on your website. What can they find there? I know you've got something really cool for them. So if you want to let them know.
So when I did the first Year of Fear project and people started finding out about the project, they wanted to create their own Year of Fear projects, but they didn't know where to start. So what I did is I created a checklist of just 100 interesting, unconventional ideas that you could use to kind of abandon your comfort zone or try something new right away. And so if anyone, you know, isn't quite sure what that next step is, but they want to work on just taking some action, check out my website. It's super simple. Just go to heykendra.com/goodbye comfort zone. And I'll give you a checklist of 100 of my favorite, you know, ideas. And it'll give you some good ideas of how you could get started. And I encourage you, go to, you know, heykendra.com, goodbye comfort zone, get the list, find one item that excites you and mildly kind of scares you, that seems new or different, and put it on your calendar in the next 7 days. And let me know what it is. You know, it's super easy to reach me on the internet. If you have any questions, shoot me an email. I'm really accessible. Anyone that's on my email list knows that if you email me, I write every single person back. There are no minions behind the scene. It's me. And so I'm really excited to just help people wake up to their life. And, you know, I think we're all hitting the snooze button a lot of times and we're all just kind of going through the motions. And so if you'd like to, you know, put your foot on the brake a little bit and just try something new, check out that list. It's really cool.
Good stuff. Well, Kendra, this has been awesome having you here. And I know that we'll probably have to have you come back and we'll dive into the whole passion thing.
Oh, we can totally riff on that because I get really passionate about it.
Okay, cool. Well, we'll definitely dive into that a little bit later. But I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day. And it's been awesome to reconnect with you a year later and just to kind of see where things have gone. Because I know I was certainly a different person back when I met you. I was just, you know, 5 or 6 months into my podcast. And I was just, you know, this guy who thought he was interviewing some people and it would be cool to share it with the world. And now it's, you know, turned into, I think we're at like 120, 130 episodes and, you know, tens of thousands of people worldwide tuning in. So it's just been an awesome journey.
Absolutely. I always love, like, at the beginning of a year or even just a year back, if you're the same person you were, you know, like, you want to be totally different. I think that, you know, over time, we should just be this big constant work in progress and always stretching our comfort zones, trying new things. And heck, you may be really surprised where you turn out. All of a sudden you have this crazy successful podcast and you're really helping people, you know, kind of wake up and change their life and make some decisions and take action. And I think that's fantastic. So super excited to be here and really, really happy to reconnect.
Good stuff. Well, any lasting words of wisdom or just one final quote that you want to just leave everyone with before you head out?
Yeah, totally. God, there's so many things I could say, but I think if you want to change your entire life, change your relationship with fear. Start running towards it instead of away from it, and you'll be really surprised what you find. You won't die. You know, granted, you know, little exclusionary note there, like some fear is good. Don't walk in front of buses. but things like, should I ask the girl out? Should I walk up to this person? Should I buy the domain? Should I, you know, try this new thing or whatever? It's always a yes. Always a yes. Action and traction. Action is where traction happens. And so go after those things. Just get started. And remember that they're going to call you crazy before they call you cool. And just because it's normal to be boring and, you know, kind of sleeping through life and miserable at your work doesn't mean it's okay. And it's all right for you to be different.
Thanks, Kendra.
Thanks so much.
Hey, everyone, it's Zeph. Did you like this episode? Be sure to subscribe so that you can tune in next week and tell a friend about the show. If you want access to free training and exclusive interviews on success, happiness, lifestyle design, and adventure, visit me at yearofpurpose.com. Until next time, go out and let life surprise you so that you can live a life rescripted.